Hello and welcome to the Sprocket Podcast, where we are simplifying the good life. And I am an old, old man. My name is Brock Dettis.
And I'm a slightly older man by the name of Aaron Flores. We are broadcasting from Portland, nestled in the heart of Cascadia.
We are the show that brings you somewhat irreverent conversations about the intricacies of thinking locally with a global perspective and enjoying the very best that life has to offer along the way.
Covering day-to-day life, food, alcohol, bicycles, and alternative transportation. Hey, I'm doing all of the big one by memory.
Yeah, you are.
We actually had cut that down, so have to do that.
Yeah.
And now I've lost track. Oh, trains and transit.
Yeah, and bikes.
And simpler living.
And other things. Yeah, and today.
And today, Raiders of the Lost Archives.
It's like a thing you know, and yet it's slightly different. It's turned about 90 degrees. We're sitting here with Lillian Carapac. Hello. Welcome back to the studio.
Hi.
We're just discussing how it's been way too long since you came in and talked. Longtime listeners will know you as a part of the Portland Afoot team, and we did the crossover episode back in 11? Early 12?
Maybe.
Something
early
like that?
12, something. Yeah, something.
Yeah, it's been a while.
And
yeah.
You actually come here and record weekly anyways.
No, monthly. No,
monthly.
Yeah, we've recently upped our bikeportland.org podcast
I just revealed my ignorance. How often I've been paying attention to the Bike Portland podcast.
Well, at the moment, it's slightly less than monthly because I got sick last week and I haven't edited it yet. So the January podcast is going to come out February 4th. But
yeah, it's cool. But the sickness has been going around. It's been tough for a lot of people I know.
It's rough.
So. I've been coughing all week.
Yeah, you're still under the spell, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And are you done yet, Lily? Are you?
I think I'm mostly done.
Okay.
Today it was condensed by the fact that I only got an hour of sleep last night because I stupidly drank coffee at 8 p.m.
Oh, right.
And I go to bed at 9.
Mm. That's a recipe
for
success.
Yeah, that turned out that I didn't get to bed till 3:30 and I wake up at 4:30. So.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
It's been a long time since I've done like a day on an hour's sleep.
I went back to sleep after I got home from work at 10:30, so I had a little nap for myself.
I guess that's the benefit of having a job or having jobs where you have multiple shifts.
Yes.
Because you have time between and you don't necessarily have to be there for 8 hours.
Yep.
Yeah. If it was an 8 hour job and if you were working like on a production line somewhere, you would have like a shoe shaped thing on your arm or something right now.
Yes.
And filing a union grievance.
I do say the saving grace of parking bicycles as my morning job is that, like, I can't fall asleep doing it. In the office, like, being really tired is so painful because you're just, like, watching the screen sort of fade before your eyes and, like, nodding off. But, like, when I'm parking bikes, all I'm doing is walking back and forth. So it's, I really can't fall asleep.
Right.
So.
The sad part about my job is that I drive a school bus. Yes. And so
you should not be
being tired is incredibly dangerous.
Yeah. I learned early on that, feeling blinky when you're on I-5 driving a large vehicle is bad.
Yes.
So I try and get my requisite amount of sleep every night.
I do too. Generally this 1 hour of sleep thing was very, it was the fallout actually from being sick. As I just felt so behind on work that I was like, maybe I'll have some coffee. I'll be able to get like the last thing I need to get done. And then that was a terrible idea.
Yeah. Well, it happens. We're all still alive. We're all here.
Yes.
And hey, there's beer. Uh-huh. You're having, what is this I forgot what I got you because we did a beer swap.
Yes. I'm having the Fire Mountain Brew Steam Fired Stout.
There we go.
Which is quite as good as it sounds.
Yes.
It has a mountain on the front, and I feel like it's very appropriate for the taste.
That is Dark Mountain because it's a dark beer.
Yes.
So,
yes. It's a mountain in the shadow.
Yeah. And I brought, I brought that. You brought the triple, which I had over the weekend, which is a fantastic thing from New Belgium. And as a matter of fact, I was just in correspondence with the professor from New Belgium Brewery and Fort Collins Bike Scene. And I sent him a little care package because he sent me one a while back.
Oh, that's so nice of you.
Yeah, Aaron, if you hear this, it's on the way. And New Belgium Brewing, good people. And you, Aaron, you're drinking something for political reasons.
Who'd have thought, you know? Yes, the greatest threat to America these days, according to Glenn Beck and Fox News. Coca-Cola, my friends.
That's right. Well, If the whole world drinks Coke, the terrorists win.
Apparently, we are literally on the road to perdition because of the Coca-Cola ad.
Because of that commercial. I've actually not seen this commercial. I've just read tons and tons about like the blowback from this commercial. Mm. And so, you know, this was like just a few hours before coming here. So, of course, I'm going to have to drink Coke.
Well, I think just reactively bought Mexican Coca-Cola, right?
Well, it also tastes better. But it does. Okay, so here's like the other level of irony, right? So it's Mexican Coke. But this is something that I've heard is what's billed here in the States as Mexican Coke, even though made in Mexico with sugar, is still not drank over there in Mexico.
It is no longer legitimate Mexican Coke.
No.
That's actually what I've heard,
yeah,
too.
It's made in Mexico to send over to the U.S.
as an export. Weird. Yeah, and Mexican Coke
and they
is
still
basically
have to drink the shitty, you know, corn syrup.
Yeah.
Coke that the rest of us generally
drink.
Well,
Coca-Cola used to have cocaine in it, so...
I miss those days.
Yeah.
Back in the 30s.
It was a different time.
I know you're an old
then.
Man. Bro.
No problem staying awake then.
It was a different time then.
Right. But seriously, kids, don't do drugs. But actually, speaking of being an old man, the reason I feel like such an old man right now is because I went out camping. I did not go bike camping this weekend. It would have been fun if I had. But one of Adele's friends wanted to go out camp, just wanted to like spend a night in the woods. And so we hopped into her car and we went out to the Salmon River. This water bottle I'm holding in my hands has Salmon River water in it, which I purified yesterday morning and did not actually drink. But it's
and what's
good
your
stuff.
Method of purification these days?
Depends on the day. We have Aquamira, which is a decent, if you're camping, it's a decent purification system. It's a chemical sort of thing. You put two chemicals into a cap thing and put it into your water and shake it up. I use the iodine tablets and the iodine taste removal tablets. They come as a pair, and they work out all right. So, yeah. And then I have never done filtration, but I've been thinking about that just because filtration would be nice in a lot of contexts, especially if you don't know where you're going to get your water from next.
Sure.
So. I had this super fancy UV stick when I lived in India.
How does that work?
It's like a giant glowy stick that you put in your water bottle for like a minute and a half, I think.
Does it radiate the water?
And it glows. And usually I would pretend it was a magic wand and say something like agua puramenti or something. And
agua cadabra?
Also because it gets really, when you have to purify every single water, all the water you drink all the time, it gets kind of boring to have to constantly do it.
Right.
It makes the water taste a little bit like water you've left out on the windowsill.
Okay.
But it's good. I mean, it's better than iodine. It doesn't taste like iodine, but and it's super fancy. It kills most of the stuff.
Yeah.
They're kind of expensive, though.
Right,
but
right.
I think they're like $150 for one of the wands.
But worth it, especially if you're in a place where the water
if you
is...
have to purify your water constantly, yes.
Right.
Because, like, iodine tablets, you have to know how many you need. And, like, this, like, charges solarly and, like, is this really... Yeah, so...
That's cool.
It's pretty great. I like having it for bike camping now, but I wouldn't have bought it unless I was going to India.
Okay,
so,
right. Yeah. There's also, I have never found out, I forget who makes these, but I think it was developed for third world countries where water purification is a big deal. And it was like this straw that had a filtration thing in the bottom of it.
Oh,
you could actually dip the straw into whatever you were drinking and it would filter things as you drew the water into the straw. Yeah. So that's kind of a cool idea, don't remember who made those. But the cool thing is, again, and I don't know how many times I've brought this up now, but the Mountain Express shuttle goes between Sandy and or somewhere near Portland up to Timberline Lodge. It's operated by Clackamas County. You know about this. We freaked out about it a couple months ago, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. But this is super cool because this is the first time that you've been able to get to Mount Hood without having to own your own car.
Well, no, there used to be a Greyhound that ran.
Never mind. When was this?
The mid-90s, there was a Greyhound that ran up there.
Oh, nice.
It stopped running, I think 2001 or 2.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
I've never heard about that.
Yeah. Yep.
But it
went to government camp. It didn't go to Timberline.
Gotcha. Okay.
So
this is the extra push that you need if you want to relive The Shining, I guess, or something like that. But the cool thing was that there are stops all along the Highway 26 corridor, and the Salmon River campground we went to, it's a national forest campground, so it's free. And it is, I don't remember the distance. It would be easily walked, I think, in a day. If you like packed a backpack, hopped on this bus, you could also probably take your bike on the bus. But I'm excited about the idea that you might be able to pack a backpack and do a through hike into the woods and pop out somewhere up near government camp. So if you're really stout of leg, you could go like maybe 2 days and do it in a weekend, or maybe three on a relaxed pace. But either way, this shuttle runs like 7 to 9 times a day,
it's
something
really,
like that.
Yeah, it's quite substantial.
The schedule, yeah, the schedule was built to be useful to people who want to actually go outside and recreate. Like a lot of buses will operate on an assumed like workday schedule, mm-hmm. but this is one that actually works for the people who want to go out and have fun in the woods. So
it was. It's mostly considered a service though for people that live in Sandy and work up at the lodge, right? Is that
I would imagine that's a big piece.
I think that's how they wrote the grant to
probably
be able to pay for it.
Yeah, definitely. And this Mountain Express did exist before they expanded the service, but I think it was a far more abbreviated schedule. So, anyways, this is good news for all of us, I think. A couple more things I wanted to highlight. Steph Routh's Move by Bike is available online for anybody who wants to hear it, including the guy in Germany whose name I forget, who wanted to figure out how do you move by bike in a town where you don't know anybody else with a bike. So this covers some of those aspects, I think. Not necessarily the establishment of a bicycle culture, but how to kind of pull things together and get people to do fun stuff, which means, and my quote was, I believe, I gave her a publicity quote, which was something to the effect of, this is how you get your stuff from one place to another without ever having to turn on the ignition. So, yeah. Anyways, we'll have a link up to that. And then Street Books, who you and I, Aaron, interviewed.
Oh, yeah.
Is that also like 2 years back, something like that?
It was before I was an actual co-host.
Right, you were
a
pinch
hitter
that time. Yeah. But you did a good job.
Oh, thanks.
And yeah, I believe Street Books is having their annual fundraising or... I'm trying to remember if it's a fundraiser. They would like to raise some funds. I know that. But they're having a book drive down at Sisters of the Road this Friday.
Oh,
so
badass.
If you're in Portland, you have some free time on Friday, you want to drop in. Sisters of the Road is a great thing.
Yeah.
Their food is fantastic. And I believe someone will be producing or passing out blank Valentines. So if you don't have a Valentine's card yet, you can grab one there as you donate your books. Or you can donate to them any old time just by using a simple PayPal link. So... yeah, I think that's it. Anything else you wanted to cover?
Yes, the Gateway Breakfast House.
Mm. Yeah?
I went there today.
Oh, nice.
It was amazing.
Yeah, that's like East Portland.
For like $7, I had coffee and 3 eggs and hash browns. That was like a huge-ass plate.
And you're holding your arms out like the fish was this big.
Yes. Yeah,
exactly.
Okay.
That's fantastic.
But they don't have bike parking there.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so this was kind of funny.
I rode
out there. I've been wanting to go to this place for a while.
I've noticed it as well.
And, you know, just it's my day off. We recorded an interview to play later in the future.
It's true.
And so I had this time in the middle of my day where I was already out. And again, we talked earlier about like, I don't want to go home yet or because my motivation to come back out would be diminished. So I just rode around and realized, oh, wait a minute, I've wanted to go to this place.
And it's
like,
time.
What, like 120th and Halsey? Or
something like that. It's way out there. It might be like slightly before 122nd, but out there in the kind of the eastern hinterlands of Portland.
Yes, yes. But so they don't have bike parking. I happen to have my cable with me, so I wrap my cable around like this telephone pole they
there
have in
you
the
go.
Back there. And,
well
you
done.
Know, put my U-lock around there.
Gorilla style.
And then, so I get in. Oh, and... on the table, they have like all these different ads for various things.
Uh-huh.
One was a hydroponics place where you can go and get all your hydroponic needs for your indoor tomatoes.
Nice. I love growing tomatoes indoors.
Yep. Yeah, because why else would you
have
hydroponics?
System.
I can't think of a reason.
Nope.
Yeah. but amongst them was a Tom's Cargo Bikes.
Oh yeah.
Ad sitting there on the table. Yeah.
Tom Labonte.
Yeah.
Builder of my tall bike intriguing. And many other innovative bikes around town. That's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyways, while I'm there, it's totally like your classics greasy spoon diner experience.
Mm.
But overhearing the waitresses talking to each other, as I'm finishing up my meal, and one of them goes to the other like, did you see that bike out there wrapped around the telephone pole?
The bike itself. It's like,
right. Right. I don't know. Like I apparently just didn't really, you know, have the language to describe what exactly was going around the telephone pole.
Of course.
But like she was kind of laughing, but the other waitress was like, shh, that's my customer. That's my table.
And you totally overheard the whole exchange.
Oh, yeah, I did. It was great. Well, the place is small. Like, the dining area is maybe the size of your apartment here.
Yeah. Is it as vintage as it looks from the outside?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, cool. I'm going there.
Yeah.
All right.
Anyone in the Portland area, if you're looking for a good, cheap breakfast, there's your place.
Fantastic.
Get your ass out there.
All right. You heard it here first.
Maybe they'll put in bike parking, too.
That's right, yeah.
If enough people show up.
You can just request a bike parking staple in front of any business in Portland.
Really? Just me, myself?
Mm-hmm. And you.
I don't have to be an owner of said business?
It doesn't mean that it might take a really long time to get put in, but it goes into the city's queue.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Nice. Okay. There you go.
And then the city shows up and puts one there.
My bike.
What the hell are you guys doing?
Right.
I don't know. Someone requested it. It came up on the queue.
It wasn't us. That would be a fun... Man. We should,
does it have to be a business? Can I just give them random addresses?
No, you can do it in front of residential too, but I think you have to be a resident. I am not going to speak with authority on this.
Right, right. It's okay. I would assume you would have to be like a long-term resident or like a homeowner or something, as opposed to like someone like, I just moved into this apartment complex.
No. You can ask. If you live in an apartment complex, you can ask to get staples installed on the sidewalk.
Oh, I should have done this a long time ago.
Yeah. The problem is your sidewalk's not wide enough.
It is not.
I probably wouldn't do it.
It's not wide enough for like me. By myself.
No, that's the problem is like you can request it, but then they'll evaluate it based on XYZ things.
Right.
And
run all the factors through a sieve.
Yeah. So I've been trying to figure this out too, because my apartment also does not have bike parking. Mm. And I carry my bike up the stairs to my second floor apartment, which is can really suck a lot of the time. when I have like a lot of cargo in the back.
Indeed.
Sometimes I do the like unload all my cargo, carry my bike up, then come back down for my cargo. But it really sucks when there's short term guests, like when
right.
we were recording the podcast at my apartment, like Michael and Jonathan, that like tapped out all of the possible places to
all
put
the
them
options.
And so they were just like locked in the bushes to each other.
Yeah.
And there's I live on a double block, so there's not even like a stop sign in front of my place. So you have to like walk all the way around the corner and stuff.
Yeah, and that's like the last ditch effort is like this the street pole or something.
Right. Well,
or like the cables that come off the power poles.
It's frustrating because we've got more car parking spaces than we have ever used and more than we do units.
Yeah.
But we don't even have a single bike parking space. And now the requirement is my apartment was built way before it, but the requirement now is 1.7 bike parking spaces per unit.
Okay.
Yeah.
But a lot of people are grandfathered.
And there's requirements about short and long-term bike parking and stuff. The Portland City Code's very nice now, but...
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. But it took a while to get there,
yeah.
I guess. So
American Property Management made their apartments much before that.
Ah, yes. Yes. And they have a fair number of locations around town. None of them which appear that bike-friendly to me.
No, they were literally all built in the 70s.
Yeah.
Yeah. They all look identical pretty much inside. Same shag carpet.
Oh, they have shag?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Sold Brock.
I do love shag carpet. Not everywhere, but like, you know, like if I just had one room with the, you know, place to put the record player and a couch and bury your toes in the shag. I enjoy that. But not everybody does. Actually, I don't think Adele's a fan of that at all. She's given me the thumbs down from the kitchen. So I guess that means no.
Your future.
I have friends that had just sort of a room off their apartment that was like a really small kind of attic-y tiny room.
You sure?
That he had totally 70s shagged out.
Yeah.
And, I'm not entirely sure that his now wife is a huge fan of it, but it was sort of like, it was like, that's the lair.
Right. Yeah. And I think of it as kind of like, that would be my man room or something. I have also thought of the possibility of if you totally... absolutely could not find a place with good bike parking, you could get a two-bedroom apartment. Say you only need one. You could get just one more bedroom and then throw all your bike shit in there. So that's kind of a thing I've thought about, but it's certainly not my first option.
It does kind of increase the marginal cost of your apartment.
A little bit.
It does. It does.
By a lot.
Yeah, especially when it's an amenity you probably could find for free somewhere else. So,
right.
Yeah. Well, speaking of your bike, you since last time you were on here solo, you got a new bike. So
yeah.
What do you have?
So I got an Ahern bicycle.
Those are nice, right?
She's beautiful. Her name is Dora. Nymphen Dora is her full name. She's named after a Harry Potter character.
There you go.
She is bright yellow and she's a midtail. So I'm 4'11".
You're a smaller person.
Yes. Or 1.5 meters for metric listeners,
for the rest of the world.
I am tiny.
Good conversion.
Very tiny. And because of that, I can never actually find a bike that fits me appropriately.
Uh-huh.
And I also have arthritis, so it's hard for me to put weight on my hands. So this was sort of a physical therapist was the one that fit me for the bike so that we could find something that would allow me to tour for really long distances without any pain in my wrist and my hands.
Okay.
So nice. I'm really upright. It's actually a touring bike, but it's ridiculously upright.
Right.
And it's a mid-tail. So there's actually like quite a lot of space between the down tube and the rear wheel. So like, you know how an extra cycle is like really long.
Super
out
long.
In the back. I've got like the mini baby version of that.
Okay.
But the nice part is I'm such a tiny person that even though this bike is actually quite like long in the rear, my bike itself is so small that it's smaller than still than an average size bike, even with this extra long back part.
Okay.
And the rear rack is integrated with the frame, so I can carry people on it.
That's nice.
Which Ooh. Is cool. It's not like it's not nearly as nice as carrying people on my cargo bike is, but it's like in a pinch, it'll be totally fine.
So. Right, right. And that also bodes well for touring. If you want to go camping or long-term touring, you can carry a lot more weight on the back that way than you could with a wobble rack.
I can fit two. So he built it so I can fit two sets of Ortliebs
really?
On the back if I want to.
Really?
Yeah. Yep. The bike is supposed to, we're supposed to go around the world together.
Yeah, I think plan. I remember you talking about that. But it's one of those like kind of opportunity versus...
I was a finalist for a grant that would have paid after I graduated for a year of me traveling around the world, but I didn't get it.
Okay.
So I'm, you know, doing other things because the magic $30,000 to travel around the world fairy didn't come. So. Well,
not this time anyway.
I was going to say, I have to lose a really big tooth for that to happen. So, yeah. But in the meantime, you've been doing a bunch of interesting things, which keep you very busy. So you work for Kyle down at, Go By Bike, right?
Yeah, Go By Bike, Bike Valley. Yeah, that's one of my morning jobs, as I call it.
Right.
But, it's literally just parking people's bikes. There's not a whole lot you can say about that job.
Sure.
It endlessly fascinates my high school friends from the Midwest because they're just like, I don't understand.
How is that a thing?
Like, what?
You just take someone's bike and park it for
like,
them?
Why is what? That? How is that a job?
Yeah. Where? You said you grew up in Ohio?
Yeah, yeah. Cincinnati.
Okay. So, right on.
And I just went back there for hopefully the last time ever in my life. So,
whoa.
Yeah, I don't have a fond relationship with it. But
well, that's like almost in Kentucky there.
It is. Yeah. I actually spent about half my day when I was... when I was a teenager in Kentucky, because I skated in Kentucky. So, because I was a competitive figure skater growing up. So, yeah, even critical mass is like it might be the only two state critical mass on a regular basis. And they're hoping to have a bike share system in Cincinnati by the summer.
Really?
And their bike share system is going to be the first bike share system that's across two states.
Oh, that's fascinating. Yeah. And what's the town on the other side?
Covington, Kentucky.
Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah. It's sort of the greater Cincinnati area. Cincinnati is so spread out that the airport's in a different state.
Right.
So the airport's actually like 20 miles into Kentucky.
Okay.
Which really sucks. It's not, you know how it's lovely. We picked up some friends from the airport on Friday, you know, with the
Using
big bike
bikes.
Parade.
Yeah.
Not so possible at Cincinnati Airport.
Right. Well, 20 miles is one thing. And then there's also the infrastructure, I suppose.
Yeah. And a lot of hills too.
Okay.
It's,
right.
Cincinnati's very, very hilly.
Yeah.
Imagine if you even had the ambition for something like that, it would be so foreign to the culture
of
Cincinnati. Like somebody would stop you and be like, you
can't take the bus to the airport in Cincinnati.
Uh-huh. Really?
Like there is no public bus to the airport.
What? So
you can take like a bus to a shuttle, like, and change transit systems.
Yeah.
And that even like won't get you there with any sort of regularity or... And
so you either
really
have to drive or know somebody who drives.
You pay $50 for a taxi because it's so far away that the taxis are also quite pricey too.
Big cab lobby. Lobby. Yes.
Yeah.
That's rough.
It sucks.
So that's one of the reasons why you're not fond of Cincinnati.
I am not fond, but man, biking is coming up there.
Right.
Like when I was there, I was definitely like, I always have this, like, the first couple days in there, like, I could live here again.
Uh-huh.
Like, and then by the fourth day, I try to take the bus or something, and I'm like, oh, right, this is why I don't live here.
Right.
But, yeah, they've got a coffee shop that does a lot of the support for their bike month there, which is essentially their Pedalpalooza.
Nice.
And I think they're probably the second closest thing to Pedalpalooza. Like, they have more events during Bike Month in May than any other city in the country does.
Yeah.
And they do bike and movies, and they do, like, the equivalent of Breakfast on the Bridges, but instead of on a bridge, it's, like, all over town.
Okay.
And they have a coffee shop that gives a lot of financial support to the bike organization there that delivers all their coffee by Extra Cycle. And, yeah, no, it's definitely, like, a really cute, like, bike culture coming up there.
That's awesome.
The streetcar is also going in, and that became a big political battle, but because essentially the current mayor got elected on the premise of stopping the streetcar, even though it had already started construction and been funded.
The Lord Mayor will rip out the rails.
Like, yeah. He literally, like, what's just he stopped do, construction in the midst of already building it.
Right.
Like, because streetcar equals bad.
I don't know. Of course. Well, if you have a strong enough car lobby, you know.
Yeah, or taxi lobby.
I don't think it was the car lobby. I think it's
bad political will.
As with everything in Cincinnati, everything boils down to race in the end. So I think a lot of it came down to kind of racial politics, because there's nothing in Cincinnati that doesn't come down to racial politics. But
intriguing.
That's kind of too bad.
When I was still living there, we had race riots in 2001 that shut down the city for a couple days.
That's holy fascinating, yeah. Which I have never heard about.
Yeah.
Really?
I don't think so. No.
This is what baffles me, is like so not only did we have race riots, we were then boycotted by every major African-American celebrity for 2 years following that.
Wow.
No one would even come to our town.
I guess that kind of makes sense.
It was like
it'd be very
thing
hard
to
play football for your team.
And I guess I was only 18 when it happened too, so I have no
I think a lot of Bengals fans might think it's very hard to play football in Cincinnati as well. Cincinnati is, very much split between the two, because it was essentially the most northern stop, or the first north of the border stop that was a free state. So
it's very
heavily populated by ex-slaves, and it was sort of the first northern stop on the Underground Railroad. So you can still, like, there's still houses there that have Underground Railroad, like, trapdoors and stuff. Yeah.
Oh, that's bad. Yeah.
Like, you can just live in a regular house that happens to have held slaves above the kitchen.
Right.
Huh. Yeah.
That's intense.
It's quite cool. There's a very deep, interesting culture there, but unfortunately.
Also, like, this deep sort of this undercurrent of segregation or racial tension over there.
Right. You know, I feel like Portland's only starting to talk about race. Well, and in the country as a whole is only really starting to talk about race politics with police.
Yeah.
And in Cincinnati, that's what started the race riots in 2001.
Okay.
And so I grew up really with that being a very vocal thing that people talked about a lot.
Sure.
And like very... And so I'm sort of like, when is everybody else going to catch up to where we are at in this discussion?
And Portland is way behind on that.
Yeah.
And it took like...
It's also, Portland is not like 55% black like Cincinnati is. So there's a conversation that needs to happen in Portland, but it's a different conversation.
Right. It's not universally applicable.
Yes.
You can't pull out some sort of miracle cure from some other place.
Yeah. Well.
Also, the hipsters, are they biking to the bees?
The bees?
Isn't that, I think I saw something on the internet about hipsters are calling it Applebee's. Bees.
This is Brock reading me back my drunk tweets from Cincinnati.
Okay, there we go. Apologies if you didn't want that
shared. I found
out
that hipsters call the Applebee's the bees.
Wait, this is a real thing?
This is a real thing.
No.
Like, it's actually, like, totally a thing.
Hipsters go to Applebee's to appreciate it ironically.
No, hipsters go to Applebee's because you live in the Midwest.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
For lack of other options. Yeah.
It's the bees. Okay. Like, that's a thing.
It's the bees' knees.
Oh, my
God. It's really fascinating to me.
That's intense.
Yeah.
All hipsters, the differences.
I think there's a few hipsters that bike, but biking is not really a hipster thing in Cincinnati yet.
I met a hipster with a minivan once. It was when I was bike touring down in Monterey, California.
Once?
Yeah.
See, like, I guess I'm from the Midwest, where I'm like...
where they all have minivans. Yeah.
Where I'm from, the hipsters all have kids and minivans.
And Chevy Astros, yeah.
Now, there are those in Portland, too. No, I've met many hipsters. Speaking of hipsters, that's a terrible segue. That's...
Speaking of hipsters, tell me about your other job.
I was going to ask you about the IPRC.
Oh,
but that's a terrible thing to say. I'm putting that out there now. Apologies, so no one comes back and tells me I'm a terrible person, because I know I'm a terrible person.
We do have a few hipsters.
I was just looking for a good segue. That's all. let's clear our palates here for a moment. So the IPRC.
Where's the wasabi, right?
Right.
Seriously,
right.
Yeah.
Some ginger, some pickled ginger here.
You've been involved with it for a while, right?
Yeah, I have been. Actually, an alarmingly long amount of time now.
And it's the Independent
Publishing Resource Center.
There we go. Okay.
There's been talk that maybe our branding is not the best with our name.
Uh-huh.
I don't think we ever... So we've been around for 16 years now, and I think... Initially, there was no, we were really just like a copier in a closet and like a pile of zines.
Right.
And no one really thought that we were going to grow into the large, vibrant, huge, huge community serving organization that we are now. And so the idea that like something like a long, cumbrous name like Independent Publishing Resource Center might be a problem for us and an acronym that is very easy to confuse.
Sure.
So.
Well, and while you're just a copier in a closet, like that kind of gives it more of a, it sounds more noble.
It sounds very official when you're a copier
exactly.
in a closet. But
yeah.
Once you're like big enough to have grown up in your own right, you know, I think a cutesy name might serve us better at this point.
Right. Like Zines Inc. or something. That's terrible. I got to stop saying things.
I think the ink people might have some trouble with.
But it would be with a K.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Yeah, there you go.
I'm striking out. No, but...
Well, one of our kind of our sister organization is 826 Valencia, uh-huh. which is Dave Eggers started a literacy kind of teen youth center that's also a pirate supply shop in
oh,
San
really?
Francisco. But they're called 826 Valencia, literally named for the address, that they
yeah.
were at.
Okay.
But like they're still located 826 Valencia in San Francisco, but they now have a branch in LA that's
right.
like clearly not located there. And it tells you nothing about what they do.
Right,
right, right. It's no longer descriptive, I guess.
Right.
Yeah. So, and a zine, just for anyone, like I'm sure there's a bunch of people listening that already know,
what's
but anybody that doesn't, a zine is, it's an independently published resource.
My short description I give it is a magazine that's produced for love, not profit.
Right, right. And so instead of a large corporation putting out the direct that they want to share with the world, they think is important, or at least they think will sell, this is stuff that people think is important enough to do for love, not for money.
Right. And that's become more and more like kind of a publishing for love, not profit. But since blogging culture has surged, it's and podcasting.
Right.
You know, that idea is less foreign to people now. You don't have to sell people on the idea that you're literally just making this thing because you want to make it and share it.
Right. Unless they think that Mexican Coke is going to ruin the world, then they probably do have
that's,
a problem with
yeah,
independent thought
too,
but yes
yeah.
Glenn Beck,
they're
can I buy
target,
you a Coke?
They're probably not the target zine audience.
Not
but
exactly
the thing about zines is way before blogging or podcasting or the internet was a thing, zines and fanzines is the full name, the zines essentially were a way to directly engage with your audience and produce something at a very low cost.
Right.
And so there's a whole bunch of genres of zines, fanzines being one, which fanzines are traditionally like sci-fi zines that are, you know, the first ones were made for Star Trek. Like,
yeah.
Like really adorable mimeographed 1950s, like fanzines for different sci-fi things.
Yeah. Just for like you join our mailing list or something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And, you know, essentially any low-cost production method. So mimeograph was really common in the beginning.
That's an old-fashioned copier.
That smells and takes a long time.
Right. Weren't they, like, purple or something?
Yeah.
Is
and they're,
this,
like, kind
yeah,
of smudgy and purple.
Ink.
We still... So that one of the many things the IPRC has is we still have mimeograph machines.
Right.
And we will train you on how to use a mimeograph. So
no
if
shit.
If you like old
school...
If
for some reason you want to have your zine
mimeographed, we will help you mimeograph your zine. We also do letterpress, so our presses... The mimeograph looks newfangled compared to letterpress, which all
oh, really?
Our presses are from 1890. So.
Yeah, yeah. I know... Chris Chen came in and talked about the Sunrise Coffee Club. I know he works for... Was that the Type Foundry? Are they at all connected to the IPRC?
In the way that, like... Every small publishing organization in Portland is connected to
they
the
all
IPRC.
Know each other.
Yeah, well, and a lot of folks actually started, like, a lot of print shops or small publishing groups started in the IPRC at this point. Like, we have accidentally become an incubator for, like, small press in this town, which is really awesome. And, you know, it's just a buzzword way of describing what we've always done. But it's pretty cool.
Yeah. I'm curious. Well, first of all, maybe should we talk about the Raiders of the Lost Archives? Because that's the hot topic here.
Well, maybe I should explain what I do at the IPRC first.
Which will put this all in context.
Yeah. So I described all of the wonderful things about zines. Another really common genre of zines is perzines, which are personal zines, which is essentially like a blog on paper. And some people had subscribers, but mostly you used to trade them through the mail a lot. Now that happens a little less than it used to, but you would go find a Fact Sheet 5, which was essentially a very large zine about zines that would have little tiny reviews, like one-line reviews of different zines in it, and someone's P.O. box, and how much in well-concealed cash they wanted for their zine.
There we go.
And you would send, or if they would take trades, and you'd send them a little letter in your zine in the mail to their P.O. box, and they would send you one back most of the time. Sometimes not, but meh. And that's my zine background is like, I was pretty involved with that and I was involved with it in the days when the internet was starting to be part of it. So back when LiveJournal was a thing, you would like post on LiveJournal that you had a zine available for trade and people would send it to you that way. But now what I do is essentially I am in charge of preserving the history of all of those zines.
Right.
So the IPRC has a zine library that has over 15,000 zines and that are cataloged and over 20,000 zines waiting to be cataloged.
That's a lot.
It's a lot. We get so many donations of zines. We have zines dating back to the 1950s. Uh-huh. We have some zines that we have the only copy at this point left.
Does that freak you out?
It does. Like, it's my job to keep these little things safe.
Right. This is the only copy that exists anywhere.
Right, yeah. Some of the zines that we have, all the originals were destroyed in Katrina. And we've got quite a large collection of New Orleans zines that, as far as we know, we have the only copies that are available for circulation.
Never thought about that. Like, natural disaster, acts of God, that sort of thing, are going to wipe out physical medium like that because they're made of physical things, and they're not duplicated or replicated or whatever.
I think more people now back up their zine like originals on the computer, but like all of my original zines are still literally in file folders that are just like a thing I hold on to.
They have not yet been digitized.
No. And so my job is sort of caretaker of these zines, but a lot of the struggle of my job is cataloging them because a normal library, you know, they acquire a bunch of books and they're able to just go on and hit a button and get all of the information about how to catalog that book because it has an ISBN number and someone else has probably already cataloged it. Because our stuff is so unique, it is also usually does not exist in a catalog.
Right.
And so everything we're doing is original cataloging, which to librarians is like, that's a porn phrase to say, like, all original cataloging.
No, seriously, this would be the first time you've ever cataloged.
Yeah. This is going to be the only catalog entry in WorldCat for this.
Holy shit.
That actually, you might get the explicit tag on iTunes just for me saying that. But what we've ended up doing is I've tried to find ways to make it exciting for people to volunteer to read the zines and catalog them and make it really easy so that you don't have to have a library science degree in order to catalog these zines.
Sure. And there are so many of them that you can't do them all yourself.
Oh, there's no way.
There's no way.
There's no way. 20,000 zines are just in boxes waiting to be cataloged. Both the previous zine librarians had them in storage, including our former zine librarian who just had them stacked up in boxes that his cats crawled on in his room.
Mm.
And when we moved them into his room, the ED of the IPRC was like, I really hope this doesn't affect your love life, Mark. And he's like, any girl who doesn't like boxes of zines isn't a girl for me.
I guess that's a decent qualifier.
He also does have, in very large letters tattooed across his stomach, zine life.
There you go. This guy's into it.
He's pretty awesome. He runs zinethug.com.
Okay. So, there you go. Obviously with the tattoos and such.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. No, it's really great. He writes people send him their zines to review, and he will only review them meanly.
Okay.
Is the idea.
Yeah, he's like the zine snob.
But people still send him PDX. Zines to get reviewed all the time.
Yeah.
Do you ever try to contact like some of these people who've written some of these old ones? Or?
Part of what we actually catalog is their original contact information.
Okay.
But one of the cool parts about cataloging zines is that, you know, you have to estimate the year.
Yeah, yeah.
If it's not written in there, you have to be like, from context, when was this made?
Sure.
And my favorite is like, oh, do they have a Hotmail address? That probably like, you know.
1998.
Yeah, is there, like, if there's a Gmail address, like, we can date that after a certain amount. If they've got an AOL address and still a PO box.
At angelfire.com.
If they do not have any email address listed whatsoever, like,
you know. And then they have the one that's like, I was hanging out with Neil Cassidy the other day. And then you know it's from the 50s.
When people like mention certain television shows and stuff, it can really help peg zines. That's actually one of the most fun parts about it. So I guess that brings us to what Raiders of the Lost Archives is, which is just archaeology of zines, essentially, but in a giant live-action role-playing game.
An RPG.
Yeah. So essentially, we're LARPing zine cataloging.
How does this work?
My life is awesome, by the way. So
this is great. I love this concept. I laugh, but it's so awesome.
Gryffindor.
I really, yes. I hope there's a Sprocket podcast team this year. So essentially, this one day a year now, we do this thing called Raiders of the Lost Archives. It's a 24-hour zine cataloging competition.
Okay.
And so last year was the first year, and I had no idea how it was going to go. I just like was like, come catalog zines, be on teams, compete. I'll have a lot of food and coffee and beer and like stay up for 24 hours. Like, we'll see how it goes. And it was wildly successful. We cataloged 80 people came. We cataloged 1,000 zines in 24 hours.
Oh, wow.
We finished our last one around dawn and like had We Are the Champions playing. And
there you go.
And around.
People weeping with joy.
It was like both exhausting and amazing. And essentially, we leveled up the game this year. So we built like a custom gaming platform for it. So when you catalog, you get like digital badges and you level up and you like get a see live. So essentially, I had a leaderboard last year that was a whiteboard that I like updated every hour, like as
just
people were
with
kinda,
your
like,
thumb
with with a
wipe
marker
it off
and like a little thermometer that you color in, you know. but this year we've got like a whole game platform that we built for it.
Nice.
That other libraries are free to come ask me about, and I can share the source code. But
is the electronic? Because you just said source code.
Yes.
I was going to ask the question, but then you answered it.
No. It's so it's all online because it all has to get digitalized so it can go in our catalog, right?
Yeah.
So you input the zines online. So essentially you show up, you compete, you like hang out and use our laptop or bring your own and just read through whatever zine you've picked out and catalog it. But we're doing all sorts of weird badges this year. Like if you catalog your own zine from when you were a teenager, which had happened twice last year,
nice.
You get a special badge. If you catalog at least 10 zines made in Oregon, you get a special badge. There's the cool part is that we're both an online game, but we're in real life. So we're able to merge the like way that you get badges. So some of the things are actually like you have to go into a box and find a real life thing. And then that gets you extra points in the game. Also, I'm the game mistress, and I can just randomly give people points for anything.
There you go.
Which is pretty cool. Like, that is explicitly... There's only 4 rules to the game, and, like, one of them is, like, the game mistress can just give you points, like, if you have a nice hat.
Nice.
So. Excellent. I know what I'm bringing.
And there's a best costume, best team costume / uniform category as well.
Ooh. Okay.
But, yeah, you can get a team together. This year, we're limiting teams to 5 people, because last year we had a team that had, like, 25 people and they won their category, of course,
yeah,
they just went a little crazy, so
so
we figured it was more fair, and that way if you've got 6 friends, break them into 2 teams of 3 and compete against your friends. It'll be more fun anyway.
Totally.
So, and there's like alliances you can do in the game. There's all sorts of stuff that happens during the event. And you don't have to stay up for all 24 hours.
Yeah. So this is an entertaining way to get what could be a mundane task done.
Yeah. Well, it's
this is some Tom Sawyer shit, if I've ever heard.
Totally.
The president might walk by while you're whitewashing that
fence. I do want to point out we have like pizza and beer.
No, no,
and
this is
coffee.
Great. This is great.
Yeah, yeah.
I at least feed you a little better than Tom Sawyer did.
Excellent.
But, yeah, fuck that racist kid.
I am curious, just because I know that the question will be asked by someone out there on the internet. What is the relevance of printed zines today? And I know you've already kind of answered that question in a way, but maybe just to put it succinctly for anyone who's like wondering why zines still matter, what would you say to them?
Well, do you still go to the library? Do you get out paper books? I mean, that's roughly like we're preserving a really tiny slice of history. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the zines we preserve are capturing marginalized voices that don't get portrayed in mainstream media in any way and don't get published in mainstream media. And what ends up happening is that academic researchers that want to, you know,
this is sort of the people's history.
Right. Yeah. They want to look into Chicana culture in Southside Chicago in the 1980s. You're not going to find anything about that that isn't like an original source account that's probably in a zine, like, or someone's diary. Like, they're just, that isn't an experience that's talked about. And so that's what's really nice about zines, is it talks about the kind of experiences. A lot of the work that we do at the IPRC is within prisons and youth centers and with homeless populations. And what we do is, you know, you have a voice and your voice can be publishing your own work. And that's what zines are.
And your voice matters.
Yeah.
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 That's a good answer. Thank you. And again, like I said, I recognize that and I love it. But I think it's probably hard to grasp if you're not familiar with the concept and if you haven't given it a lot of thought. So,
well, and there's cool digitalized zine libraries as well. Like they do exist. Like there's projects that are devoted to digitalizing zine libraries. The Queer Zine Archive Project, QZAP, is really great. It's run
now
by
a cutesy name.
It is. I know. They also have the best sticker that has ever existed in the history of zine stickers, and that is not saying that lightly.
Yeah.
Zinesters do it on the photocopier.
So they do. So they do.
So good. It's my favorite sticker that I can't put on my laptop in case I'm in a work meeting at the city.
In case you're around grown-ups.
Right, right. My I Heart Transportation System Plan sticker is okay. But
right, right. Exactly.
But actually, Milo, who runs the Queer Zine Archive Project, which what they do is they scan like the entirety of zines and put them on the internet. And they have about 600 zines, I think, now. But he's coming out and competing at Raiders Lost Archives.
Nice.
We have people coming from, he's from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, Seattle, Vancouver, BC, Boston, Washington, D.C., all over the place.
Wow.
Yeah.
Chicago.
Yeah, yeah.
Excellent. I believe I have been to the zine library in Cambridge, Massachusetts, which.
Papercut.
That sounds right.
Yeah.
I was there one time back in 2007 and I haven't been back since, but I probably should go again. But
I think I'm doing a talk there in April. But,
are you?
They're really cool people.
Nice. Yeah. Excellent. Yeah. And then of course you have that project coming up, which is all still super secret and under wraps. So we'll talk about that when you get back.
Yes.
Cool.
Super secret project that
I love that we just throw that out there.
It might involve me being in Boston in April.
Right, right. anyways, is it IPRC.org?
The Raiders registration is raiders.iprc.org.
Okay, excellent.
Yeah. It's linked from the front page of iprc.org.
Okay. Fantastic. So we'll put that up on the Sprocket website as well.
Awesome. So, you should come register. It's going to be really fun.
And this is March 22nd?
It's March 22nd through 23rd, so all 10 a.m. to 10 a.m.
Fantastic.
And I would love to see some Sprocket podcast fans there.
All right. Well, the word is out and the gauntlet has been thrown. Excellent.
There's some really competitive people in it, so if you thrive off that.
Right, right. So. Excellent. Well, thank you so much for sharing that with us. Really appreciate it. Thanks. Sounds like a good time, and I am hoping I can be there. Can you show up for part of it if you can't be there for the whole thing?
Yes, definitely. All right. Okay. Yeah, you can catalog quite a lot of zines. It takes about 15 minutes to get trained, so you can catalog a lot of zines in a couple hours.
Excellent.
You can show up right when the pizza shows up.
Right. And I could conceivably do that. I could be trained before I get on the train to go on a bike trip for spring break. So.
Ooh.
All right. I think I'm the wheels are turning in my head. Yeah. All right, well, how about, should we do some mail?
Let's do some mail.
And some news?
Let's do some news.
What can compare with the thrill of a brand new bike?
I like my bike, it's fast. I like my bike, it's fast. I like my bike, it's fast.
around the city lights. Pedal just as fast as
we
can into the morning
light. We really only have one headline.
It's true. There were lots, but I just chose the one.
No, and you chose, I think, the best of the lot.
No, thanks.
From Bike Portland, Dan Kaufman, Fat Bikes, to the Oregon coast for a meeting. The idea of building a statewide multi-user trail network has been a passion of mine for the last several years. Along these lines, I've been promoting the vision of an Oregon coast pathway since 2010. This interest naturally led me to the Salmonberry Corridor Trail, a project in the preliminary planning phase, which would connect the banks to Tillamook via the Oregon Coast Range. After attending my first meeting last fall, I've been following the project closely and was determined to attend the latest public meeting last Friday in Wheeler as a representative of the Northwest Trail Alliance. I could see a path in the coastal section being used not only by thousands of tourists, but also by locals as a way to easily get from one community to another or safely to school or work. Overall, the rail trail path from the valley to the coast is the kind of transformative project Oregon needs for community health, transportation, and tourism.
Yeah, the article is fantastic. There's a bunch of great photos.
Yeah, one thing not mentioned in this section is that, well, it's mentioned in the title, I guess, is that he actually biked there to the coast for this meeting.
How long does it take to fat bike to the coast?
That's a good question.
Yeah, I didn't take down the statistics. I would imagine, I mean, it couldn't have been more than a day. I mean, it would be a long day.
He didn't really say in the article.
It's true, yeah. Okay. I did ask him if he'd want to come in and talk about that sometime. He said, fuck yeah.
All right.
Yeah, so I think that'll be a future topic. But yeah, the Salmonberry Corridor is going to be a fantastic project, assuming it gets built, and I'm hoping it will, because how great would that be?
Yeah, and another thing that's not mentioned in this little blurb, but he mentions early on in his article is, you know, he's really passionate about this, and part of this thinking, part of this passion is, if I really want this to happen, if I really want to be a representative here in this meeting, as somebody pushing this to be a multi-use bike trail, I can't just drive my car there to this meeting and then expect to, like, you know, sort of, I guess, yeah, you know, he probably could have.
But the weight of showing up on your bike.
Yeah, of showing up on your bike and, you know, even having just those few days experience to also back up whatever else you're bringing to the meeting.
Definitely. Yeah, and this meeting was on the coast. The last ones that they've had that I've been keeping my ear to the ground about this, and I think most of them have been in banks so far, so closer to the metro area. And this was a meeting out on the coast to kind of take the pulse of the coastal residents' feelings about this trail and what they value, what they don't value, what their concerns are. So I am really glad that this is a public policy sort of driven decision that is being taken very seriously, which I think will get it great traction in the long run. So, yeah. Well, hey, mail?
Let's do it.
Ah, damn it.
You've got mail.
Oh, all right. We're going with that one.
No.
Have you heard this?
We got mail. Hey, we got mail.
Jim recommends we check out this incredible cargo bike from Butchers and Bicycles.
Yeah, and this is a cargo bike with, it's a tricycle, basically. It's got two wheels on the front, but it's also, is it articulated? Where, like, the body and the container and everything shift and the wheels rotate around it. I'm not sure if that's very well explained. Basically, you can corner really nicely on this bike.
Huh.
So, yeah, worth a look.
Nice. Second, Johnny K. asks about the Elf vehicles we reviewed last week. Do these have doors or panels you could put over the openings? Sometimes during the rainy season here in Florida, it rains sideways.
Sometimes it rains sideways in Portland, too. Actually, more often than not. And I think the second version of Organic Transit's Elf vehicle is going to have doors.
Okay.
So, yeah, eventually.
Stephen Wyoming chimes in on fixing glasses with super glue.
After I broke mine.
As you mentioned last week. Yes. Put down the super glue.
And I said too late.
Super glue has full strength immediately, but the bond quickly deteriorates. The length of the bond varies, but it quickly deteriorates to 50%. There are many better glues for this. If the glasses come apart again, try JB Weld or any other epoxy. JB Weld can even be used to glue a steel bike frame together if it breaks out on your trip across North Dakota. And the last year, in last year's tour divide from Banff, NM, what is the state abbreviation?
Minnesota?
NM.
NM?
Yeah.
Is that UConn?
Is that New Mexico?
New Mexico. Oh my God.
Right.
Yes.
Oh, two Banff. Right. I was trying to think of a Canadian province, but yes.
The guy that.
Well, if it's Banff, then it might be in Canada.
That's true. Right. The guy that won it crashed and broke a seat stay or chain stay early on in the race. The guy made it to a hardware store, glued up the broken carbon stay with some JB Weld, and made it over 2,000 miles without any problems. That is amazing.
Which is pretty cool, yeah. And I would still not choose carbon as my first choice of a material, but knowing that like you can fix a thing with JB Weld.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
It sounds, yeah, sounds good to me.
Well, even steel.
I like that you have
be.
Such knowledgeable about, you know, things to attach other things. Listeners, what's the word I'm looking for?
Adhesives.
Yes. Our listeners are
knowledgeable listeners.
Definitely. Yeah. And well, have you ever broken your glasses? I assume at one point in your life you have. Did you fix them or replace them?
The tail end of my me working graveyard at 7-Eleven story was that when I interviewed there, I literally had a safety pin holding my glasses together, but I was all I had. I couldn't even go out and buy tape that matched my glasses because I was just like, this is all I got right here. This safety pin.
Right. It holds it all together.
Yeah. Yep.
So conceivably a safety pin and JB Weld would fix a carbon frame even better.
Yeah.
There you go.
Or possibly a steel frame. I'm going to get some JB Weld though.
Especially if you're working graveyard at 7-Eleven with your carbon bike.
Yeah. Now, how great would that be? Just to, like, have JB Weld whenever you needed it. I think that would be a thing.
I think it's one of those things.
Is JB Weld
like,
easy to carry around, or is it like a high volume?
It's like two little tubes, I think.
Well, no.
No?
JB Weld comes in, if it's the thing that I'm thinking about, it probably, there's different JB Weld
It is a brand. There's
models?
Probably multiple products. Yeah.
Right, products?
Models of glue.
Yeah. But the one I'm thinking of is basically this tube of putty. And then inside that tube is another type of putty.
Okay.
And then once you sort of, you cut off a slice of that and you mix that up.
Oh, and they mix together.
And when those two mix together as you're sort of, doing it, that creates the reaction that causes it to bond to other things.
Right. And so strongly that you can't possibly break it apart.
Right.
Even on 2000 miles.
Even on 2000 miles. That is amazing.
Yeah. I like that story a lot.
Isn't this like the second time Steve has mentioned JB Weld, though?
He might have. He might have before.
Does he work for JB Weld?
That's a good question.
Steve, do you work for JB Weld? Is this just advertising? Anyways. Next, Timo speaks to us. Lenny Anderson, a true raconteur.
That he is.
He made reference to Smart Trips and its progenitor, Travel Smart.
And this is the link I couldn't find, actually, so I'm glad he wrote in.
Yeah. I just wanted to chime in that we're still going strong and providing information and encouragement to those who are interested. And he posts a link that we will post to our website. Our webpage currently shows three flavors, Smart Trips Business, Welcome, and the original Smart Trips Portland. But for 2014, our main program will be Smart Trips Welcome. Starting in April, we'll offer information to everyone who moves to a new address in our city this year. We mail out an order form for things like free maps, information booklets, and incentives like pedometers. The people who respond receive the materials delivered to their door by bike. And don't get me started on the activities like guided walks, classes, and of course, the Portland by bicycle rides.
I kind of want to get him started on that now.
I like it. We're like, does Scott work for JB Weld? And then we're like, yeah, we know Timo works
for JB Weld. Yeah. Well, I mean, he says it.
Right? I have a friend who just moved to LA and requested cycling maps. And she said she got them the next day.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's not bad.
Talk about LA being on top of it.
Coming up.
Maybe that's because no one else requests cycling maps.
Because no one actually bikes in LA. Yeah.
Not enough demand.
Hey, we got a customer.
Biking in LA is not that bad.
No?
It's been talked down a lot, but I think it's actually, it's kind of a city that's coming up. Everything I've heard about it the past year or two is
because they've maxed out all of their, like, car density. They've got nowhere else to go.
Well, they've got a lot of nice cycle track infrastructure down there.
Really?
Right? Yeah. And they have what they call bus rapid transit, although
Not so rapid.
Not so rapid.
For it to be rapid, it would have to be
not
away
so
from cars.
Not so buser rapidy or transity, really.
Okay.
Is this our last? Yes. Lastly, Doug loves Ragbri. Ragbri is Register's annual great bike ride across Iowa. Last episode, we were going Ragbri. What's Ragbri?
What the hell is Ragbri?
Register is the name of an Iowa newspaper, and it's a ride, not a race. A handful of people treat it as it was a race, but the overwhelming majority leisurely pedal along, many toting a beer keg or a full-blown sound system. I even saw a tall bike, or whatever those crazy old-school big front-wheel suckers without a chain are called.
Like a high-wheeler.
High-wheeler? Yeah. Yeah, tall bike is a different thing.
That's true.
To us over here, anyways. Yeah.
We're very discerning about our tall bicycles. Penny farthing, high wheeler, lamp lighter, tall bike, mini tall.
And we have 20 words for rain.
Like Guthrie's blog theme, the unexpected side diversions were the best part. My two favorites were the 150-foot slip and slide on the side of a hill and the rope swing pond. The non-riding Iowan population pride themselves on their hospitality to bicyclists, and they have every right to boast. We were constantly getting flagged down by locals to join them in their yard or garage to tip a few back. So that's pretty awesome.
Yeah,
I think
definitely.
We're going to have to do this.
It's supposed to actually be like a really amazing ride.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Iowa's pretty flat, I would think, right?
I think you do not actually go up or down a hill. For
it's
the
like
entire,
zero elevation.
Yeah, there's like zero elevation gain or loss on the entire ride.
It's the perfect ride to drink on.
Yeah.
Right, yeah. Yeah. Well, and I don't think there's like a lot around you for most of the ride too. So
I wonder if there'd be a way to like arrange a cross-country tour to where you hit Iowa just as Ragbri starts and then...
That's a good idea. I'm probably way too late on that for this year, but it seems like, yeah, that'd be fun. Yeah. Well, someday there will be a Team Sincerity on Ragbri.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. Lily, thank you for coming in. Thank you for sharing all your knowledge
on
zines. Did I offend you when I talked about hipsters and things? I didn't mean to. I feel really.
Yes, I'm deeply offended by being called a
hipster. That's why I asked.
I'm pretty sure when your job titles are bike valet and zine librarian and database wizard, you are not allowed to be offended when someone calls you a hipster.
Only if it's called a wizard, I guess.
Yeah.
All right. Cool. But thank you again for coming in.
Yes.
And again, Raiders of the Lost Archives, March 22nd.
Yes.
Excelsior.
Gryffindor. Raiders.iprc.org.
Yes.
All right. Well, hey, this has been a good show. Let's end it.
Find us on the internet at thesprocketpodcast.com. Send feedback about the program and suggestions for topics and or guests and or drinks. Write to us via email. The address is thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com or call and leave us a message at 503-847-9774. Connect with us on Twitter at Sprocket Podcast. Thanks to Ryan J. Lane for providing our theme music. Thanks to Hurt Bird for our headline sounder. And thanks again to Shadowfoot and Logan Smith for their reoccurring donations.
Yeah. Thanks, Logan, for signing on.
Yeah. Well.
I love zines.
Everyone get a zine.
That's right. And brush your teeth and go to bed. Adieu.
Huzzah! So I'm asking you a question, and that's indicated by I'm pointing at you.
Sometimes I envy the whole like editing sound in later thing.
Then you don't have to do this elaborate.
It seems like it's easier, but I'm too in love with the.
But you can just push your podcast out as soon as you tape it, like.
Basically, yeah.
Yeah.
See? I mean, it depends. It depends on how long we go. Oftentimes, I'm too tired by the end of the night. Like, I used to stay up until, like, 10 or 11 and get it all done.
Yeah.
And then I realized I'd get up at 5 in the morning and it didn't work out so well.
Yep.
So, you know how it goes.
I'm very familiar with how that goes.
All right, here it comes. A Sprocket Studios production.